familiar with members here?
I'm not going to be introducing them to you.
I think this is an annual standing item where every time this time, every year this time we look at your annual report, your previous year performance, both of non-financial and financial performance, after we've allocated you the funds for the year. The report is going to tell us how far you've gone, and we're happy that we're able to produce the summary of the whole report, or the two reports, that is financial and non-financial report. And let me hand over to you to make that presentation as prepared. And from the onset, perhaps also use the opportunity to thank you for looking well after our finances. That is shown by the clean audit you received from the Auditor General. Thank you for that. May I then hand over to you? Thank you.
To achieve a more effective and efficient economy, to restrain particular trade practices which undermine a competitive economy, and to regulate, amongst other things, the transfer of economic ownership in keeping with the public interest. And you would have noticed from the report that Chairperson Honourable Member that a lot of our work in fact has to do with those principles and with the public interest. The content of our presentation consists of the following. The case review, and we will review very briefly the cases. The performance review, the financial overview, the challenges, and we'll also conclude. Of course, Chairperson and Honourable Members, we will also take any questions which you may have for us. Chairperson, before I begin the presentation, you will recall that when we last appeared before you, you in fact directed us to come before you on what difference my appointment has made. In fact, we issued such an instruction to the chairperson and the deputy chairperson at the time. Chairperson, I came from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor, as you know, And so the transition was really easy, because it's still a public entity enterprise. The competition tribunal is extremely well managed, functions very well, it performs its functions and its duties, it carries out its obligations in terms of that in an excellent way. And so in effect I came into a well-functioning, well-oiled machine, and so it was easy to swap. In fact, I am part of ICSA. I participate in the day-to-day running of the function. I chair hearings, I chair pre-hearings, and basically I attend all the functions which are assigned to me by the chairperson. The chairperson, as you and the honorable members know, the chairperson in fact directs the competition tribunal, and I'm his deputy, and I automatically stand in for him if he's not available in terms of that. But in fact, it's very little for me to do except to participate in those meetings, to ensure that you are able to meet the case law, and to of course add my own expertise and knowledge and skills to the general function of the tribunal. So I'm pleased to say, Chairperson, my appointment has assisted the tribunal, and through the tribunal, the Minister of Economic Development, and the government and the people of our country, to meet the objectives in terms of the Competition Act. Our function is judicial in many respects, although it's an institution sui generis in the sense that it functions in service of the Act, the Competition Act, but it's also inquisitorial. And so while the proceedings in the Competition Tribunal are conducted in an adversarial way between the parties, our way of tribunal will be inquisitorial. And it's a very interesting experience for me coming into work from purely adversarial in the sense that we can go beyond and behind the evidence which is presented in order to determine the actual facts. And so in fact the competition tribunal plays a very important part. It's independent, it's objective, but it also has the ability through those inquisitorial questions to probe and to ask questions which other people may be in doubt. And so I think it leads to the tribunal being able to in fact provide forum for people to have their disputes in respect of these matters adjudicated in a fair and impartial manner, because you don't recognize the matter through that inquisitorial process. And you don't in fact stand back, but as a tribunal, you can step into the arena and ask the appropriate questions which aren't asked by the company. So that checklist, I'll turn to the case review item. Essentially, we deal with two types of cases. There are mergers and prohibited practices. But very recently, as a few days ago, we had a very interesting application. We were asked to make a tax report in respect of a matter brought to us by a company listed on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange. Now that company, ACI, had restructured internally, and it felt that it didn't have to notify the merger for that restructuring. Because in 2014 it had restructured, and it had notified that restructuring, and so it felt that this new restructuring, it didn't have to be notified, because it took the view that the competition tribunal had in fact acknowledged that through the process of the 2014 merger filing, HCI would in fact obtain de jure control ultimately of the Sorbosan holding as it were. We heard the matter on a very urgent basis to accommodate the party, and only because it was urgent and they were going to meet their shareholders and convene a meeting, and we were able to deliver an order within 2 days after the hearing. That matter was taken on appeal to the Competition Appeal Court, and the judgment is awaited. Then, the Chairperson, Honourable Members, I'm aware that you're familiar with all of this, but I'll deal very briefly with what mergers actually are, just to contextualise the work that we do. And Chairperson, Honourable Members, feel free to ask any questions you want to as I go along, but I won't be long. Mergers occur, as you know, when one or more firms, directly or indirectly, acquires or establishes direct or indirect control over the whole of another business. And so, Chairperson, what we need to do when that happens, we need to look at the merger and we need to adjudicate. paper. And there are in fact three types of measures. There are small measures, there are intermediate measures, and there are large measures. After our role at the competition tribunal becomes really important in respect of the larger measures. Small measures don't necessarily mean they have been notified of the competition position. Intermediate measures have to, and in an intermediate measure, a party to the merger, if that party has participated in the proceeding, can refer to the competition tribunal for an order on the conditions attached or on the approval of the merger. But in respect of the large measure, we are obliged to communicate on the matter and to decide whether the merger should be approved, with or without conditions, or whether in fact the merger should be rejected on the interest grounds. And so, Chairperson, that in a nutshell then of the merger, prohibited practices are of course prohibited practices in terms of Section 4, which are horizontal prohibited practices. For vertical prohibited practices in terms of Section 5 and abuse of dominant status in terms of Section 8. In fact, Chairperson, we don't appear to get many abuse of dominant cases, but we have one schedule set out for from the 1st to the 14th of November, although those dates are probably going to be changed to the 8th to the 14th. And that's in fact going to be a case that's been set down for a number of days. All in all, we expect it to be about 20 days. So in that sense, the case review on the mergers themselves. The largest merger Chairperson in South African history was, of course, the AB in the SAB Miller. And Minister Patel mentioned that. It was certainly the largest merger. But a number of factors were taken into consideration to protect the public interest. What the conditions were that there was to be no retrenchment in South Africa as a result of the transaction for a period of 5 years after that transaction. SAB Miller was required to dispose of its interest in the sale, the right of arrivals to access free space applied to outlets of the merged party to be made available to us. Other things, competitors to the bottle crown supplied by SAB Miller had to be treated fairly, and supply conditions for input supplies, particularly in respect of barley, were also imposed. And those were issues which Mr. Patel alluded to. And so it wasn't just the biggest merger in South African history, but the conditions attached were probably unique anywhere before, and it attracted a great deal. We had the unions participating in the merger and in fact arguing very forcefully for their rights. And as you know, Mr. Patel himself had a role in the matter and met with the merging party and basically presented a public interest perspective on what the merger must achieve. As you know, Chairperson, honorable member, SAB Miller grew up in Newlands. Cape Town, just a few kilometers from here and a few meters from where I grew up in Claremont. And so it's a route in South African, but it's now become part of an international global firm, although a few years ago it did take a primary listing on the Johannesburg Stock Exchange, sorry, the London Stock Exchange, but for all intents and purposes, we still regard it as a predominantly South African company. And then we had a prohibition that was where we prohibited that because there were only two parties that in fact mined that particular ore, as it were, and we felt that there would be anti-competitive effects from that, and we thought that it couldn't be removed with conditions being imposed on it. We now turn to the next slide, that is slide 6, which will show you, Chairperson and honourable members, about the matters which we've approved without condition and the matters approved with condition. So you'll see for the year ended 2015 to 16, 8.45 of the mergers which we dealt with were approved with condition, without condition, while 19.55 were approved with condition. In respect of the 2016-2017 year, the year under review, 80.95 of the measures we dealt with were approved without condition, and 18.10% were approved with condition. In 2015-2016, we dealt with a total of 133 measures, and in 2016-2017, we dealt with a total of 105 measures. We now turn to slide 7, Chief President, on the group members. In the respect of 42.10% of the measures approved, that's 8 out of 90, we attach public interest conditions. And in the prior year, out of 26 matters, we in 73.7% of those matters, we attach public interest conditions. The measures in, and we'll come back to AB InBev, S.A.B. Miller, slide 8 again. I indicated that S.A.B. Miller still regarded as being a South African entity, and it's an iconic South African beer brand. And so the conditions which we attached included the public interest conditions, and we made certain that the merger was pro-competitive. And then too, we received, as I indicated earlier, a lot of cooperation from trade unions and small businesses, all of whom participated in the merger proceedings. And then I'll go on to slide number 9, and we continue with the mergers. I mentioned Anglo-Sulite Resources, and I should also mention IMER South Africa, where we prohibited the two mergers. The mergers were protected, and we thought that the mergers would lead to monopolies, and the parties to those two mergers did not agree with our decision. They appealed to the Competition Appeal Court, which upheld the tribunal decision. On page 10, Honourable Chairperson, Honourable Members, we give you an overview of the prohibition, and we also indicate to you what the Competition Appeal Court decision was. So you'll see that for example, in the JB Group, we prohibited the large merchant, and that decision was not appealed. In the Tonga Group, we prohibited it, and they did not appeal. In the Sasol matter, we prohibited it, but the Competition Appeal Court approved it. In the Mondi case, we prohibited it, and the Appeal Court dismissed the appeal. In Engen, we prohibited it. They didn't appeal. In Medicross, we prohibited it, but the Competition Appeal Court approved. In Massmart, we prohibited it, but they withdrew and appealed to the Competition Appeal Court. Telkom, we prohibited it. They didn't appeal. And in Pioneer, we prohibited it, but the Competition Appeal Court conditionally approved. And in Imerus, which I mentioned earlier, and Anglo-Sulite, we prohibited it, but the Competition Appeal Court dismissed the appeal. We now turn to slide 11, also on mergers, and we mention other notable public interest matters. The one was EFCOM, where 2,000 new jobs were created, and we provide for training for current staff. And Coffee and Procter and Gamble, the third parties were protected. I have the details of these matters, Chairperson, Honourable Members, and we can make that available if you wish. Slide 12 gives you some of the media coverage around some of the work that we've done as a tribunal. And you'll notice that the tribunal gets a lot of media attention, as does the Competition Commission. In fact, we met with some international competition experts 2 weeks ago. They were here in South Africa. And they told us that if you speak to competition lawyers and competition authorities anywhere in the world, they will tell you that South Africa runs within the top 5 competition authorities anywhere in the world, and that includes the Competition Commission, the Competition Tribunal, and the Competition Appeal Court. In respect of case reviews and emergency, you will notice that we give you on slide 30 some details of what happened there. And thereafter, I think you will deal with that very differently. Thank you. Can I hand over to you?
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. In terms of measures,
with regards to large measures, there is sort of like a guideline in the rules in terms of how quickly we need to deal with the measures. Once the major parties file a notification with the commission has 40 business days in which they need to refer the measure to the tribunal. If the commission is not able to refer within those 40 days, they are allowed to bring an extension application. At any given point, we can only extend the investigation period by 15 business days, and that will be in consultation with the main parties. In a case where the matching parties do not agree to the extension, we normally would call both the commission and the parties into the room and try to sort of reach some sort of an agreement. Once the commission has referred, we have, as a tribunal, 10 business days in which we can set the matter down, either first for a pre-hearing or we can go directly into a hearing depending on the complexity of the case. And after the last hearing date, we have 10 business days in which we need to make our decision. And in this year, or that's the way they said, is that we have decided 105 measures this year, and the previous year it was 133. 70.59 of those were cleared in less than 60 days, and in the previous year it was 72.58. And we cleared 2.94 measures in exactly 60 days, which means from the date in which the major parties filed the notification and to the day that we made a decision was exactly 60 business days. And in 26.47, we cleared in more than 60 days. And that would probably be measures where there were a few issues, and you might have that we took a while with the hearings, and there were a bit more complex than your run-of-the-mill measures. And otherwise, the average clearance period was actually 54 days. In the prior year, we cleared, the average clearance period was about 50 days. This graph sort of just shows how measures we cleared, which is exactly what I just explained just now. I'll hand over to the deputy chair.
The graph quickly illustrates what we've done and shows the various percentages. So you'll notice that on page 15, which is an honorable mention, you will see that 70.59 of the matters in the year under review were attended to in less than 60 days, but in 2015, 2016, 72.58% of the cases which we heard were attended to in less than 60 days. So you'll notice we dropped marginally in the year under review. And then too, you'll notice that the blue shows us that we dealt with a few matters, 26.47, in more than 60 days in the year under review. But in 2015, 2016, it was in 7.42%, which was dealt with in more than 60 days, and that was marginally higher than this year. Now, we can turn to page and here we do a case review of prohibited practices. And all of this chairperson on the members is captured fully in the annual report. 23 of the 28 members considered part of conduct. And the total penalties imposed were 1.63 billion rand for 28 matters heard. We need to, of course, contextualize that by pointing out that the largest fine in tribunal was 1.5 billion rand and was incorporated into 1.63 billion rand. The possible legal matter took 8 years to investigate, so it was a very long investigation. And Oslo Mitchell had alluded to fixed prices and discounts, allocate customers, and fixed prices of scrap metal. But it has committed to 4.6 billion rand in capital expenditure and to limit the margins for flat steel products sold. So this was in fact a matter which greatly benefited the South African public. Further prohibited practices dealt with on slide 70, and these related cases relating to procedural matters. They think that matters in which the party who are under investigation contested the proceedings on these procedural grounds. The one was power construction, which is related to the National Road here in the Western Cape. And this issue, this procedural issue, was with the case to be dismissed because the party was not directly named in the original complaint. And we had to try to know that that wasn't actually necessary. The complicated complaint was that it was unreasonable and irrational for the Competition Commission to refer it to the Competition Tribunal, and that in fact the referral was defective. That is in fact the matter which Advocate Manoy is involved in today as we speak. And in Delaware, ultimately they settled. And in finally, the question was, should the cover price cover maximum penalty? In other words, we reported that they can give us a cover price between themselves in order that one party can get the bid, with just a single instance warranted as a maximum penalty of 10%. In the one consolidated elements was a restraint of trade, and the parties they had argued that the agreement they had reached was in fact a restraint of trade, but the Competition Tribunal decided it was actually a division of the market between themselves. And then in Omnito and Coolit agency, the matter which I seem to recall also made the headline. The Competition Appeal Court upheld the finding of collusion but reduced the penalty of 100%. So the Competition Tribunal decision was taken on appeal. The Competition Appeal Court upheld the finding but reduced the penalty. Then on slide 18, Chairperson, Honourable Members, we give you the penalties per sector, and I don't think it's necessary for you to go into that. That you know this also until if it features the event. And then, Chairperson, Honourable Members, could I take you to the performance highlights?
Thank you, Chair. I'll quickly just go through the performance review and the performance highlights. In terms of our APP, we have identified three strategic areas, which is adjudicative excellence, stakeholder relationships, and accountable, transparent, and sustainable entity. So combined, we have 28 targets that we measure each quarter and yearly. And in this year, we have met or exceeded 18 of these, which is a bit up from our performance in the previous year. This picture here just shows how we spend our money, the budget spent against the budget allocated for each strategic outcome goal. And Jenny will go deep into the budget. But in terms of the indicators with adjudicative excellence, we have 14 and we have achieved and exceeded 8 and partially exceeded 5, and there was one that we could not measure. And in terms of stakeholder relationship, we've got 7, we achieved 4, and we partially exceeded. And then in the last one, we had 7 indicators, and then we've achieved 6, and then one was partially achieved. Janine will go into detail with regards to the budget and pay outcome goal. In terms of adjudicative excellence, we had 191 methods in this year, which would be a combination of measures, intermediate measures, small measures, complaints, procedural matters, consent orders, all types of hearings that we do here. And we have spent 100 business days in hearings. And then we've had an increase in our procedural matters, which have gone up about 27.5%. We have issued 179 orders, and that would be like decisions in the matters that we've had, which is a 5.3 decrease from the previous financial year. but we've issued 153 reasons, and they've gone up by 10.85% from the previous year. So this graph just shows how the work was allocated. As you can see, with large measures, we spent a lot of time, and we also received a lot of those. And as you can see, with like complaints from private parties, there wasn't really much activity in this year. But the graph sort of just gives us an idea of where we spent a lot of our time, which is mostly in large measures more than anything. And that shows for this year and also for the previous year as well. And the some of the reasons that we are not able to meet our targets would range from how long the court record is. So if we're dealing with like a big complicated a matter, then you find that we see it's like a huge record as well that they never have to go through in order to familiarize themselves with the case. And then there's also the lack of capacity because I think a large part of this financial year we did not have the full capacity of the NGN. We were fully capacitated. And with more complex matters, we need to put in extensive research as well as deliberation from between the members as well, because the views could be different and they need to sort of reach a point where they can agree. So it really takes up a lot of our time. Stakeholder relationships. Because of the tribunal, we are called and also not open to the public, and whatever we do, we try to put it out there so that people are aware that we are there, we exist, and whatsoever that we're there. So most of our documents, as well as our hearings, are actually open to the public. And also how we make documents available to the public is through our website. As you can see from here, that in this year we posted 119 non-confidential reasons on our website, and 78% of those were posted within 2 business days. So we try and also shorten our turnaround times in terms of our decisions and how we make them available to the public. Then. We have issued 109 media statements indicating the outcome of our final decisions. And then in the last 3 months, we've begun analyzing our media coverage. Jenny will give you just more information in terms of how we're doing that. We also using Twitter a lot more. And I'll just go through one slide regarding Twitter there. And then we also have an education program that we've taken to the high schools. Jenny will go through that as well. And then we'll also just talk about our interaction with adjudicators from other African countries that we've posted in this year. So in terms of our Twitter account, we've noticed that we're gaining followers, and if we look back at where we started and where we are today, our Twitter followers have grown. And with our Twitter account, we're able to tell people in reasonably very short time as to when our hearings are happening, what decisions have been made. And people are also able to follow in terms of what's happening with our hearing through our Twitter account. And what's important to note as well is that the followers on Twitter are not necessarily people that are in the legal fraternity. It's really just anyone and everyone. I'll just hand over to Jeanine now.
Thank you, Chair. So I'm going to continue on with the stakeholder relationships, and we don't have a slide on it, but just putting it out of our annual report, Lerato referred to the fact that over the last 3 months of the year, we started to cover, to analyse our media coverage, and in the last 3 months of that financial year, there were 2,303 stories that mentioned the tribunal, with 895 of those being online, 750 in print, and 658 in broadcast. So we now are doing, on a quarterly basis, we do a detailed analysis of that, and you'll also see in our annual report for the end of this financial year a much more comprehensive paragraph on the media coverage. Then to continue with the stakeholder relationship, I think this committee will be very pleased to see that we followed up on one of the recommendations that you made in a previous meeting to interact with schools. So we had our first school visit during the last financial year. And it was from a local school in Attridgeville, and it was grade 10, 11 and 12 pupils that attended. They were given a worksheet on the bread cartel to work on before they came so that they had some preparation. And when they were at the tribunal, they attended a hearing and they were addressed by staff from the case management and registry division. And they also were addressed by other interns in the tribunal at the time. And they also, the commission spoke to them about cartels and the impact on the economy. And then there's a little quote from the principal of the school who says, the pupils had a feedback session with classmates and I was amazed at the amount of information the students returned with. They showed a real understanding of the competition authorities. Then also with regard to stakeholder relationships, we've continued to build relationships with other competition authorities, and we had visits from the Botswana and the Mauritian competition authorities, and then we participated in a program with the commission where the Zimbabwean competition authorities were visiting there. And we are also able to analyse our website statistics quite substantially, so you'll see this little slide shows you that we had an increase of over 25% in our visitors to our website during the past financial year, and within both years, both of them are just over 50% on new visitors. And then we just give an interesting statistic showing where the bulk of the users are coming from, and understandably most of them would be from South Africa, but there are some other interesting countries. These represent the top 10 users of the website. Then our third strategic goal is to be an accountable, transparent and sustainable entity, which includes both training and the financial and governance aspects. So I think one of the things that the tribunal has always prided itself on is its internship program. And during the past financial year, we had two long-term interns in case management. That means they're there for a year, from January till December, and four short-term interns. They come during their vacation period. We also had an intern in IT, an intern in registry, an intern in finance, and an intern in corporate services. So the smaller or shorter interns, internships, IT, registry, finance, and corporate services, we do a lot of collaboration with an employment accelerator called Harambee, and we get students from there who come and have a little bit of exposure to work environment and exposed to interviews and CV preparation. The total cost of our internship program for the year is just over 700,000, and if we total up all the number of days they spent, it's just over 1,040 days. Just also to add a little bit of personal information, we've given you the quotes of three interns, two of them being long-term, Indomiso, who said, rather than working in a law firm, I thought it would be nice to work for an adjudicative body. I would learn a lot about different sections of the industry in different merger transactions. And Haley, who's also a long-term one, I found out about the Competition Tribunal internship program and decided it would be a wonderful opportunity to give me exposure to competition law. Ungezwe is the intern in finance, and her comments are that everyone is so kind and helpful, and she's surprised to find that the tribunal was not like what she expected the workplace to be, with a number of challenges. Then we've continued in our own small way with social responsibility. Because we're unable to make donations as such, financial donations as an entity, we find other ways. So we've donated our old desktops and laptops to a school in Hammond's Kraal. We delivered sanitary pads to the women at the Tswana Home of Hope. And we also helped paint the hostel. There are 22 girls who live there who either have run away from home or don't have parents or young mothers with small children. Then we also have collected food and clothes for homeless people after the informal settlement had a bad fire in Pretoria. And then we donated food, clothing, stationery and toiletries to two young men in Stinkwater who had lost their parents and grandmother, and that was kind of a festive season donation on behalf of the tribunal. Then we go on to the financial overview, and I've had to put this flashing one up just to show you because we're very proud of our clean audit. We couldn't put any gold stars around it, so we made it in yellow, but I think we are very pleased with it because we worked very hard to undo some of the findings we had in the prior year, and we're very pleased with ourselves with the clean audit. Then, with regard to income, we spent 35.72 million, or sorry, we received 35.72 million, with the bulk of it being in the grant from the EDD, so that's just under 58%, and then just under 40% of our income comes from filing fees. And that, if you'll recall, that we get a portion of the filing fee that is paid to the Commission for large mergers and then intermediate mergers. And then 2.82% other income, which is generally interest on our funds, excess funds that are held in CPDs. We don't get a lot of filing fees paid directly to us, but there may be a small portion of that income that would be small filing fees paid directly to us. Then expenditure, we spent 38.26 million, which is under budget. We budgeted about 42 million. But I think as we've indicated before, it's very difficult for us to budget exactly because we always budget on a kind of 3-year average of number of hearings. So we may be under or we may be over in a particular year. And understandably, the bulk of our expenditures on personnel expenses, with 62.46% being on personnel expenses, and then 18.98% on administrative, 8.15% on part-time members' fees. As you will recall, part-time members get paid to attend hearings, and they also get paid for preparation, and they get paid for decision writing if they're involved in the decisions. Then 5.66% on professional services. That doesn't include, it's not only consultants, it also includes fees that we pay to the DTR for occupation on the campus, and then also to the Commission for shared service facility. We share some of the services with the Commission. 2.83% on training, and then 1.92% on operating expenses. Then Lerato showed you the diagram with the budget and expenditure and targets that we set and targets we met. So if you look at that again, you will see that 55.24% of our expenditure is on goal one, which is adjudicative excellence, which is what you would expect because that's the bulk of our work. 2.58% is on stakeholder awareness, the second goal, and then 16.07% is on effective oversight, financial management, and sustainable capacity. So that would include money that we have to spend for internal and external audit, for audit committees, for fraud prevention committees, plus training. And then the remainder of the expenditure would be on administrative expenses, just day-to-day operational expenses. Then we just show you this graph, which I think we tend to show you annually, that reflects over the 18 years of our operation, the interest received, the filing fees, the grant, and the expenditure. So you'll see the expenditure is the blue line, which is increasing kind of in a fairly constant rate year on year. Our grant, which has stayed below the level of expenditure, but also increasing on a constant rate, that tends to increase at the CPI, or the rate that's been agreed by Treasury, roughly 6% on year. Interest received, also up and down depending on how much funding we may have in the CPE at any point in time. And then you'll see the filing fees, how erratic that is, the orange one, because that would depend on the number of cases that have been referred to the Commission. Then the next slide just gives you a diagrammatic example or diagrammatic view of expenditure over the last 2 years. Sorry, it hasn't come out very clearly there, but it's just showing you, again, some of what we've referred to before, the personnel, and instead of giving you percentages, giving you the actual money that's spent. So you'll see that in 16-17, we spent 23.9 million of our 38.26 million on personnel expenses. And then part-time members' fees was just over 3 million, admin was just over 7 million, and the professional fees is just over 2, and then training is just over 1, and then other operating expenses is just under 1. The next one we just show you, budget versus expenditure since inception. So you'll see there's 1 or 2 years where we exceeded our budget, but most times we are underspent on our budget because we don't know, as I said earlier, exact number of matters that we will hear, and so we can't budget realistically, but I think we've been pretty comfortable with our rate of expenditure versus the budget. And that's all on the financial stuff. I'll now hand over to the Deputy Chair to talk on challenges and conclude our presentation.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. In the last presentation, the Chair and the Tribunal had raised the challenges, and we're pleased to report that most of those challenges have now been addressed satisfactorily. For example, we have new offices. We moved from the third floor at the DTI building to the first floor. And we now have just under 41% more space. I think the reality is though that we still don't have enough space. The part-time members, for example, don't have offices. And so they, when they come to the hearings, they have to find a place to sit, and that's not satisfactory. It's the meaning of professionals, and also underlying the state of the independence of the organization. And so one of the issues which we bring is to address the proper accommodation of the part-time members. They need to read through the documents, they need to research, they need to interact with the tribunal members, the case managers and the researchers, and the necessary, of course, also with the CEO, and they need to do it in an environment which recognizes the state. Two new proposals that we make, the one is Nina, the full-time deputy chair, and the other one is the part-time manager, Helga Schiedel. Professor Schiedel has really been back active in Australia, not because of the other commitments he chairs. He chairs the retail sector inquiry, and that should come to an end very soon. And then he's been busy, so he'll be much more active in the tribunal. And so the tribunal now has a full complement of 11 members. Then, Chair, I also point out to you and the honourable members that by arrangement with the Chair, I am giving the rules of the tribunal. The tribunal rules haven't been updated for a very long time, and the mergers are becoming more complex. There's a greater interest, for example, in the public interest on what is taking what are the technological advances. But one of the public interest things that we have to look at are set out in subsection 3 of 12, and it's what the impact of the merger would be on a particular industrial sector or a region, geographical region, on employment, the ability of small businesses or firms controlled or owned by historical disadvantages, persons to become competitive, and the ability of national industries to compete in international markets. I suppose because I'm new in the tribunal, I'm able to look at these things with fresh people, right? I'm not saying that it will speak through the way. And I have raised that, that in fact none of the parties who come to us, neither the Commission nor the relevant parties, deal fully with those public interest matters. And so the emphasis is on employment. And in the tribunal, I'm pleased to say there is a great awareness of employment. And so even if there's only one job that's going to be lost, we do interrogate the parties on how even that one job can be protected. And then too, it's often employment in a formal sense, in the sense that employees who are taken care of in the emerging procedures are the permanent employees. But the outsourced employees, those who come into the labour process, receive very little protection or attention. And I'm pleased to say that I've noticed a change in the way the tribunal is doing that. Then too, some very complex issues arise. We did have a merger earlier this year where there were going to be approximately, I think, 300 contract workers. And the merging party told us that those contract workers have been employed as a labour worker, and they get employed periodically. And in fact, we understood that they were the same workers who are employed as and when they are needed. And in that particular merger, simply no mention was made of those almost 300 workers. And so we raised. In that merger, I think the figure of about 16 permanent employees came up, and those 16 employees received some protection, but the contract workers, those brought into the labour workers weren't. Then an interesting thing happened, and I think it's important to share it with this committee. The merging parties then went and met with the Commission and reached a new agreement with the Commission. And they take the view that they don't need to come back to us. And this is what after we had directed the merging parties to come and address us on the employment issues of those almost 300 workers. And in a discussion amongst ourselves at the tribunal, the general view was that the parties are entitled to make another arrangement, and they don't necessarily need to be that arrangement to us for approval. And so it's one of the things that I think at the tribunal we need to consider. And we need to consider what happens when we give a directive and the parties then want to reach a different agreement with the Commission. What should happen? And my own view is, and we'll discuss it as a tribunal once we look at the revision of the rules, is that even those things where we need to look at the public interest and the employment of workers in particular should come back to the tribunal for a decision. And so we're looking at the rules. I mean, I think generally you go through a process of just looking at how you need to reposition the tribunal, if you need to be repositioned, in order to play a more effective role, and to generally enhance its status and its abilities to really achieve the objectives of that. Thank you, Chief, for the honourable members. We now take questions if you have any for us. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Deputy Chair, Mr. Commish of the Tribunal. I just want to thank you again for continuously protecting our country from people who deliver conduct themselves in a manner that is not beneficial to the country and also to our economy. People who are inward looking and not looking at the country's benefits as a whole. While we've got clarity in terms of the competition tribunal work, I don't know what the competition tribunal would say, especially about the measures wherein
your opinion on that. Especially in as far as what that means in general to South Africa. I also want to, before I hand over to members, this is normally our practice that we see the public entities first before the department. The reason being that we would want to take issues to the department, whatever that you notify us of, both challenges or issues that we might have noted ourselves from your presentation and also from the report, the department, so that they are able then to look at those issues. But this time, due to Mr. Manuel Sana's availability and your total availability, could not be for the department hand. Some of the issues that you might be raising that need the attention of the department might only be able to be addressed through our report, but not necessarily to be clarified and brought before the department on time. Maybe we could have followed up with them and they could have assisted. One of them is the need to have in my view, I don't know what the colleagues will say in this regard, the budget for outreach, I feel going to one or two schools is not much. And I understand because of your the constraints, financial constraints, you can't attend everybody. Perhaps because of your schedule, might not be able to, but perhaps it's important that we allow the department to educate our people and then and reach out to our people and in a way get interest so that more students can want to take part, especially from the rural areas, and want to also participate as competition activists. So that is the area, the two areas that I feel we needed to perhaps notify the department on so that they put that in their own budget rather than you doing that job yourself. We'll continue as members to do that in our constituency. But we feel they must be considered for choice by the government, that is the administration. Members, here's the presentation. I hope you have questions. So just to note, the lunch we have extended for 5 to, we can say from 1 o'clock. The lunch 1 to 2, taking into consideration that we still have the briefing at 2. And that happens at the old assembly, which is a walk away from here. May I take Babu January, that is Kriani, that one?
How is the need to record the I understand that. first question will be an addition to the statement that is made by the chair around how you reach out to people. You may be situated in Swami, but you are a national institution. So when you reach out, you don't necessarily just have to go into neighboring schools there. So we have to look at the entire country and go there and interact. We understand the financial constraints, but the fact of the matter is that you are not a regional institution, you are a national institution. We are interested to know what steps you took after a member went to Singapore when you had serious business to take care of. How did you plan for this member to go to Singapore in such a way that his visit to the country would not harm your way? What steps have you taken after this incident? Was you unable to meet your friend? The next question is whether you are happy now with the capacity that you have after additional staff have been brought in. And please also update us on the latest, or give us the latest on the request that was made by Standard Bank for relevant documentation from the Competition Commission. And lastly, explain to us how you are going to ensure that you avoid fruitless expenditure. So there were issues there about cell phone, this and that, and there were problems, the Auditor General was not happy. Thank you very much.
Thank you, that's it then. The last question that we'll have is why in your own opinion do you think there are more uncompetitive behavior in the country by our local firms? What would you attribute that to? I mean, you're the practitioner, you've seen more than, you know, in terms of your interaction with the firm, you've looked at investigations done by Competition Commission and you've done your own hearing wherein you have both of them, and what you think perhaps could be done better to stop this anti-competitive behavior. May I hand over to the advocate?
Thank you. What I will first say first, if you don't mind, is ask Mr. Clegg to deal with the fruitless expenditure.
Okay, so I'll look at you with the outreach program and the budget and reaching out beyond Pretoria. So with regard to fruitless and wasteful expenditure, I think the fact that we've got a clean audit this year is an indication that we've put measures in place to deal with those issues. And I think one of the other things we did, and we reported to this committee in the prior year, we reorganized our organization and restructured, and we actually now have a full-time procurement officer. We've also unpacked our division a bit more to include a finance division so that the finance functions are not I'm not doing the finance functions, and there's someone reporting directly to me on that, and I'm able to concentrate on strategic issues and also on other issues of compliance. So I think we've gone a long way to dealing with those issues. With regard to the cell phones, we've actually also terminated all contracts, so we don't have cell phone contracts going forward. People are given a communication allowance as part of their package, salary package, and then they're responsible for their own cell phone, so that also takes away that issue. And then With regard to outreach, our outreach program doesn't cost us a lot of money. It's more around time and also schools availability. The difficulty with schools is trying to find a time that suits them to come. So some of the other things that we're looking at is, and they've done one now, was in October, they actually went to a school to visit the school themselves, and that was a Johannesburg school. And then we're also looking at using campus radios as a medium for broadcasting the work of tribunal or competition authorities and starting a discussion that way. So we are looking at other ways of going outside. I think the schools issue is difficult to go beyond kind of maybe 100 kilometres of within Pretoria, because you want to be able to allow the schools to come to the tribunal to witness a hearing in process as well. So that's why we tend to focus there. Also, I think one of the other complaints we had from this committee before is that in our internship program, we were focusing on the local universities, but we've now spread that out. So we advertise our long-term interns and short-term internships on all campuses where competition law is a course that's offered. And Hayley, our one long-term intern, actually comes from Cape Town, and then we also had other students applying from Cape Town. And what we're doing going forward is because it's a problem for some of them to get to Cape Town, we've agreed that for their internship, if needs be, we will pay for them to fly to Pretoria and pay for their accommodation over the period of the short-term internship, which is vacation. Long-term, they don't need to, they get a salary, so they will be able to fund themselves. So we are working outside of our area a little bit more than we were in the past.
Thank you very much. Chairperson, honourable members, I am pleased to say though that I have had a discussion with the persons that I can meet from the outset. And be mindful of the fact that they're all by different constraints. But I put it this way. My personal belief is in Cape Town. So I will come to school here, even if you will come to Cape Town. And I think there's no reason why I form those schools when I'm in Cape Town. And the people who school thinks about competition. What is very interesting about the children who we hosted at the competition that I was before, that they understood the elementary principles of competition. Not necessarily the law, but they understood the impact that competition had on them in the community. If prices are fixed, they are moving. If prices are lower, more people have something to eat at night. And in one of the sessions, I asked them who are Kaiser Chiefs fans, and I'm a Kaiser Chiefs supporter. And I asked them who are Orlando Pirates. And very interestingly in that session, the group was divided almost equally between Orlando Pirates and Kaiser Chiefs. And immediately, almost like the competition started between the two. And so I asked him how the soccer match has to do with competition. And I explained to them that the two teams compete. And in a sense, they compete the same way as pick and play compete. Except that pick and pay wants to make the profit that's bigger than chicken, and Kaiser Chiefs, of course, wants to be the land of Kaiser many dollars. And I think it's got a sense of competition between ShopRite and pick and pay, and between the land of and Chiefs, they compete according to rules. And I think one of the rules is that they can do no collusion. They can't determine their bonds and who's going to win. They can't determine who's going to get the profit. Once you start applying those things to the sport, they understand. That's going to be a very interesting decision. And that is important as we get to the school. Chairperson, honourable members, as you know, I've only been here for just over 9 months. But it's been very interesting to make some of these observations. For example, we've had to deal with producers of maize meal who's polluted, and we've had to ask the producers
So I think it would be good to publicize competition because of the economic and the social impacts we have on the people population. In the same way, many years ago we publicized the constitution and the other practices. It's very interesting to see a person on the community. You can go into any community, it doesn't matter if it's the most deprived, informal community or sophisticated area like our community or Constantia, Cape Town. People understand their rights. People understand their rights. You go into the school kids understand their rights. Because we publicize the constitution. And when people are hungry in our country because of communism, they need to be able to articulate it in terms of competition. And so speaking for myself, I'm certain that I can speak on behalf of the tribe union. We feel quite proud of working in the tribe union to address those issues because we're mindful as the tribe of the impact it has on the general population. And so I think you're right, as the chairperson of the tribe union, because we need to do more outreach work than we have discussed. And I'm certain we're going to find a way of impacting the general population on the world. Because I think you also need the population as a whole, as happened in the bread network. The bread trader in the Altitude of the Cape, one of the most surprising is that suddenly raising over Christmas, that in fact there was a cartel and prices were being fixed. It is a simple businessman, now he's simple in the sense that he runs a simple business, while his management of the business is quite sophisticated. And look out the biggest companies in South Africa will affect for what it means for the tribe and the tribe. And so we need to create a greater awareness of that. I only see that in the following terms, there's a positive, I suppose, and there is a negative. And the positive is this. Despite the difficulties we face in the country, what we find is that people still want to be in South Africa. And the well-run companies and the profitable companies in South Africa are for their foreign companies do want to get into them because they offer and they're well-run, and it's a sign of confidence in South Africa as well. It's a sign of confidence in the economy of South Africa, and it's the recognition that the economy can grow in South Africa. So that's the positive side. But the negative side is, of course, something like SAB. SAB developed a few kilometers from where I live. They had access, you know, to the natural spring water, as swift. Also, they had access to natural spring water, but 2 kilometers away from Ekurhuleni in England. And in fact, swift used up all that spring water, and they moved out of the place, which was called Kalamansi. And so it's of course an iconic South African year when they took a primary school in London, and it's now no longer technically a South African company, but it's still regarded as being South African. And it's the same impact as they've been saying for South African groups. On the plus side here, what we're seeing at the tribe is a lot of South African companies buying up foreign companies. And so I think this is valid. South African companies with money to spend, the CIC was on the when looking at the companies which are profitable, which can help to grow the economy, the South African system, finance and everything. And so I think we need to balance it. And quite frankly, if I see certain on the community, we don't need to be fearful of the fact that in terms of expressing an interest in South African companies, I think it's a lot of confidence in the economy. What is important, and I think that's the lesson for us of anybody, if they need to do any measure, is that we need to be vigilant. And we need to impose conditions where we need to be able to impose conditions. We need to make certain that the measures are appropriate, and we need to make certain that the public interest is protected. If you look, chairperson, on your measures at the Coca-Cola SAB measures, there, for example, what the big issue was at Spada shops, for example, in the townships. Small capital owners were all
through capital, the net measure is able to impose condition that the store owner would be permitted to display other qualities, not just capital, but in those people and from them. For example, if you walk into a stand up tree, you see the first product right in front of you, and so we made certain that Coca-Cola can't sell in the other products right at the bottom. There could be a certain amount of space in the street, but also prominent space. And so I think it's important that, the competition authorities in South Africa are vigilant, the members of the public are vigilant, and to continue to raise matters of concern. We're dealing with some removal issues, Chairperson on the amendments, those are ongoing, and it's been astonishing to see the level of pollution in the household furniture removal in this group. The Competition Commission has been in some of the new work, but for example, it's been investigated and spoke that that will become surprising, that the number of divisions in the removal companies have been involved in the competition, but I don't know those numbers are ongoing. And so I think the reality Chairperson, honourable members, we sitting down cases for well into next year. And some of those reasons are that we have full heavy work schedule, and also because of the availability of the party. And so the competition tribunal is busy, but the capacity at the moment seems to be adequate to deal with the workload. In respect of the research capacity, and that Janine and Gerardo, who are more familiar with it, can speak about it as well, we have excellent case managers. We really have excellent case managers. They're young, they're highly motivated, they're fundamentally interested in the work they do, and they're committed to the topic of competition. Hopefully you'll be able to retain some of those. As Janine has pointed out, they appointed on a contract basis, but they're the sort of people we shouldn't be without at the time. We really shouldn't be. They're so young and so bright and so talented that it would be a tragedy to be even further build that skill. And then when they feel ready, they can move. But they really should have had to move because we can't improve it. And we have an interesting way of operating. It assists the tribunal members, but it also helps to develop capacity. The case managers do the summary of the cases for us. And they also prepare draft decisions. And so they really need to understand the topic. They need to read through the papers very carefully. And they engage us as tribunal members on the draft decisions. And so personally, I'm hoping that we'll be able to keep some of those case managers on, because it's good to develop the talent constantly till they reach the peak, and once they reach the peak, we start bringing in other people. And I will ask Janine and Gerardo to talk about it. Regrettably, I'm not able to talk about the tribunal member who went to Singapore. I have no details about it, but I will obtain those details and send the report to you. Janine, she can talk about that. In respect of the Standard Bank matter, we don't find honourable members, that's ongoing. And what I will undertake to do is to provide the committee with a report on as soon as it's expedient to do so. But I don't think it would be correct to, before the matter is finally adjudicated on to be reported to the committee, because a number of very complex issues of societal interest arise in that matter, and in matters which impact on the economy. In one matter, we did impose a fine on one of the banks. That fine had been agreed upon between the suppose the whole of the text would have been taken into consideration by the Constitutional Commission in deciding on that time of the particular event, we confirm the fine. And so I will undertake to give you a report on the state of the bank as soon as it's appropriate to and expedient to do that, if you don't mind. And then, Chairperson, you asked about the anti-competition behavior by local firms, and yes, it is astonishing. I think for people who sit and monitor the newspapers and monitor the Twitter accounts and the other accounts which we have, and they comment on these things. It's astonishing how local firms do. It's astonishing how local firms engage in anti-competitive behavior. And in me, in my view, rather, it has two simple words to describe it. It's corruption and greed. Corruption and greed. People want to make as much money as they can in the shortest possible time, and they don't care how they do. And so we find a lot of collusion, lots of cover pricing. But the Competition Commission, I'm pleased to say, is very active and very engaged. And they do investigate. And we've seen the results of that
the next meeting, which is at the legislature prison at 2. So if we can quickly
I'll answer very quickly. The issue of the lack of capacity was not so much around case management, it was around tribunal members. And as Rasha said, we now have our full complement of tribunal members. And I think Norman, also at the last meeting of this committee, also said at some point he's going to engage with the minister about maybe looking at changing the act, because the act only allows for 11 tribunal members in total. So we have more part-time members that might also increase availability. And then the other issue with the case managers, we are, Organigram allows for 7 case managers, including the head of case management and senior economist. And then what we've done this year is we've increased our long-term internships to 3. So as well as those 7 permanent staff, we have another 3 positions where they're there for a year. And some of those will stay on. They get appointed into full-time positions or extra contracts. So I think from that point of view, at the moment, we are okay. Then with regard to the attendance at Singapore, unfortunately with these things, whenever you don't meet your target, you have to say why. So if you look at the reference to that, it was one where we, with intermediate mergers, where there were 2 reasons issued, and they were issued late, and we have to give explanations for them. And unfortunately, the ICM conference is a very important conference for the tribunal to attend, and we only send a few people there, and those were both full-time members, and that was also the time when we had an issue with capacity. So full-time members were having to sit on hearings, plus do their day-to-day operations, plus write reasons. And that person was literally at the conference, I think, for 2 days and back again, but it didn't help getting the reasons out in time. So it wasn't that they were there for an extended period, and they needed to be there because it's one of the very few international conferences that we participate in. So that's all.
Okay. The issue here, I think, is why allow when you know that it's going to affect your productivity?
I think, unfortunately, it had already been determined that person was going, and then the case happened to coincide, and we couldn't cancel it at that time. It was at that time that we really had a big issue with lack of tribunal members. And food shortage, but generally that would not happen. It was a one
now covered.
Yes, yeah. Now got
so the main issue is how then you make arrangements to cover.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you so much. We would really want to thank you for this report and for the issues raised. I think members have also highlighted the areas where they feel some work needs to be done. And we'll continue to support the work that you're doing. Thank you so much. And I'll back to Mr. Manna.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.